Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hi, this is your host, Bill, and welcome to this week's episode of Real World Fitness. Hope everybody out there is doing well. Before we get to this week's show, I would like to take this time to wish all of the dads out there an amazing Father's Day. Wives, kids, make it a special day for him. And those of you that aren't fathers, if your father is still around, wherever he is, go visit him or pick up the phone, call him and tell him you love him. I have to say, I have an amazing life. I have a wonderful wife, a great home, good friends. And because of this podcast, I've made a few new friends around the world. And I guess the only regret I have is that I don't have any children of my own. So it's a little bit of a sad holiday for me, but everyone else out there, enjoy the day and make it a special day for the dad in your life. Now let's talk about this week's show. I have an interview with two really, really knowledgeable, intelligent, articulate gentlemen who combined have well over 100 years in the physical culture, physical fitness world. Brooks Kubik, whom I've had on several times in the past, is about my age in his later 50s, and he's been training since he was 12 or 13, written several books, hosts his own weekly podcast, Physical Culture Radio, on Superhuman Radio. And Clarence Bass, who at 77 is probably one of the most physically fit people in the entire world. Clarence has been training since he was also 12 or 13, so that's well over 60 years that he's been working out. And at 77, he has written books. He has been the subject of numerous studies at different hospitals and universities. And he is just in phenomenal, phenomenal condition. I pray I'm in half as good a shape in 20 years when I reach his age. So we have a great interview with these two gentlemen. And the thing I got to say that I really enjoy about both of them, other than the fact that they've been doing this forever, they love what they're doing. They love talking about it. This is a passion to both of them. The thing I really like about both of them is their approaches are very similar to nutrition, to training. Very real, very practical, very uncomplicated. Very much in line with what I try and promote here as part of Real World Fitness. So we'll get to that interview in just a few minutes. It's a long one. And we're going to just do the first part of it today and the balance of it next week. Also next week, we will have my friend Lisa back with another interesting article that she's dug up somewhere. Not sure what it'll be on. She sent me several items, things on water, things on garlic, things on nuts, lots of interesting things. And I just told her pick whichever one looks like fun when she feels like reading next week. One last thing I'd like to do before we get to the interview is I would like to let everyone out there know just how blessed I feel to have the opportunity to do this show. Because of this show, I get to talk with people that I otherwise would have no reason to interact with. People like Bill Pearl and Dan John and my guests today, Brooks Kubik and Clarence Bass. All are very knowledgeable in their chosen field. They are the experts. And I feel fortunate that I can speak with them and share their knowledge with you guys. But as much as the pleasure I get from passing that information on to you guys through them, I love the fact that I can ask my own questions of these people who are not accessible so easily. And I am enhancing my own knowledge as much as I hope I'm enhancing yours. So I just wanted to say that. And it really makes this doing this show a huge pleasure. Now, speaking of Dan John, my guest last week, record numbers on that podcast. I don't know how it happens. I know he posts it on his blog, so I'm guessing he's got tons and tons of followers, because as soon as we post a Dan John interview, lots and lots of people download it. And the book we talked about last week, Can You Go?, his most recent book, is available on audiblepodcast.com/Saratalk, as I mentioned last week. So if you haven't picked up a copy of that book or his other book, Fat Loss Happens on Monday, which he co-authored with Josh Hillis, that one's also available at audiblepodcast.com/Saratalk. You just sign up for the free 1 month trial and you can download either one of those two books or any one of thousands of others. Need to get Josh on here again. Josh is a lot of fun to talk to, and he's very knowledgeable, very enthusiastic. He's just a lot of fun. So I think that covers just about everything. So let's get to that interview with Brooks and Clarence. My guests this week are two truly unique individuals that have so very much in common. They're both attorneys. They're both considered experts in the iron game. And they're both just two really intelligent, fun people I really enjoy interacting with. We have Clarence Bass, the author of the Ripped books, as well as several others. And we have the dinosaur man, Brooks Kubik. And I'd like to thank both of you for taking the time to do this with me.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to it.
It's kind of interesting, the fact that both of you are attorneys and, one of you is a recovering attorney. I believe that was the phrase that was used. And I have to say, Clarence, you keep popping up everywhere. Every time Brooks has done an interview with me, your name has come into it somehow, whether it was him bringing you up or myself. In one of my conversations with Bill Pearl, I'm not sure if it's in the interview or if it was just a chat he and I were having, your name came up. And then yesterday I did an interview with Dan John about his new book, and you weren't mentioned in the interview, but there's like three or four quotes from you in Dan's most recent book. You're everywhere, Clarence.
Yes, I noticed that Dan quoted me a time or two, and of course I'm always glad to see that. He usually quotes me positively, and he's done a great job on his books. He just seems to keep turning them out.
Yeah, he's been very busy, and he keeps producing new material, and it's, on the subject of producing new material, Brooks has been on a mission lately, it seems like. What's going on, Brooks? It's like been tons of new courses. Does Trudy want to take a trip to Europe? Is that what's going on? We got to rake in some money? You've been producing a lot of really good stuff.
Nothing like that. What we're trying to do is just give people lots of good training material. And we're taking advantage of a technology that we had not used before, which is the Amazon Kindle ebook technology. So we dipped our toe in the water for that starting in January of this year and had a really good response to that. Somewhat surprisingly, I think I shared with you that I expected, because I tend to have more older readers, I expected that a lot of them would not be interested in ebook technology or ebooks. And in fact, quite a number of older readers are overjoyed that they have books and courses on Kindle now. And the reason is you can increase the font size or change the background color or do various things that make it easier to read. And for those of us who are getting up in years, that's often a challenge. So, that was a positive. And of course, the other thing is the price of postage is going through the ceiling. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. And getting books to people overseas is a real challenge. So ebooks are a way around that. And we've been very happy with that. So as you said, we've been busy. We've got 9 done so far, and I've got many more coming.
It's just great to see you producing so much stuff. I really like what you're doing with Knife, Fork, and Muscle, bringing it out, since it's such a large volume, in sections.
Well, that's sort of an experiment. We weren't sure what to do. we were originally going to do the entire book as an ebook. And when my layout and design guy was going through it, and he's very interested in the topic, so he works through these very carefully. He finished the first section dealing with protein, everybody's favorite topic. And he said, you know, this by itself is, no pun intended, so much to digest that if you added more to it, people's heads would be spinning. They wouldn't be able to keep it all in their brains. So what you ought to do is bring it out in sections. And then the other thing that will do is that will allow you to easily update sections as new research comes out. And of course, as all of us know, you know, Bill, you know this, Clarence knows it, of course, you know, there's just tons of fascinating research coming out in the field of diet and nutrition all the time. And so the idea of doing something that allowed easy updates was very intriguing. Once you have a book published, hard copy book, it's really difficult to update it, and expensive too, of course. So we thought we would give that a try for Knife Fork, and we've been pleased with the response so far, and we're hoping to get the second book out pretty soon. That one deals with healthy carbs, i.e. vegetables.
Yep. I kind of want to segue using that conversation on nutrition over to Clarence, because I'm curious. Clarence, you started out as an Olympic lifter. You've been training for 60-plus years, since before Brooks and I were born. And how prevalent was nutrition for you before you became a bodybuilder? When you were involved in Olympic lifting, what was the nutrition like? Was it even a concern?
Well, that's interesting. I became interested in nutrition from reading Bob Hoffman in Strength and Health magazine. And when I was in high school, I was the only male in a home ec class, and I still have the nutrition book that was the textbook for that class. So I've always been interested. Obviously, my interest has become more and more sophisticated and detailed than it was then, but I was always interested in eating good food. And of course, as a young lifter, I was thinking about protein. I had so much of Hoffman's high protein that the little health food store gave me a discount when I was just a teenager. So I've been interested all along. And as I finally started writing the column for Muscle and Fitness magazine, I became more and more interested. And as my books have gone along, I've been more. And actually, if you think about it, I see diet as pretty simple. If you just stick with whole foods the way they come in nature and try to eat a balance of food, you're going to be in pretty good shape. And I think a lot of people try to make it too complicated. And I think that turns off some people. They get just too much and things keep changing. People kind of throw up their hands and they say, they always is. I'm going to eat whatever tastes good to me. So, but it's certainly a never-ending topic.
Now, are you sure, in all honesty, you didn't take that home ec class to meet girls since you were the only guy in there?
No, I can honestly say that was not the reason. Because it was kind of embarrassing to be the only guy in there. I don't remember being embarrassed, but I'll never forget the experience. As far as I can remember, everybody welcomed me. I think I was pretty quiet, so I just probably sat in there and listened.
Okay. So your lifting career spanned, I don't know how many years. I knew, but I don't remember. How prevalent for the other people that you were competing with? I mean, other than making weight, how prevalent was nutrition to Olympic lifters back in, say, the 60s and 70s?
I think the main thing that you read about was protein. And I focused on Olympic lifting for about 20 years, from about my mid-teens to mid-30s, so for a long time. Frankly, I don't remember too much focus on anything, but make sure you get enough protein. I don't remember too much, you know, criticism of fast food and so on. I don't know if fast food was somewhat as much of a factor then as it is now. There probably was people saying that sugar is bad, but frankly, beyond that, I don't remember very much about it.
Okay. Then obviously, when you got into bodybuilding, the nutrition became extremely, extremely important. Brooks, you were a powerlifter. How important was nutrition to you?
It was of minimal importance. And the reason why I say that is that as long as I kept my body weight in check, didn't grow out of my weight class, didn't get fat, all I was interested in doing was getting stronger and putting on muscle. So, you know, my dietary experiences when I was younger were similar to those of Clarence. The emphasis was on protein, and I wanted plenty of protein. I think that what happens to a lot of us, I know that it happened in my case, and I'd be interested to hear Clarence's thoughts on this, is that when you're younger, you know, you have that raging metabolism and you can eat pretty much anything. And unless at an early age you're very focused on a sport where you have to control your body weight, such as wrestling at any kind of competitive level, or unless you're interested in bodybuilding and you have to go for an extremely defined low body fat physique, your real focus when you're younger is on lifting heavy stuff. And as long as you eat plenty of good food and train hard, you get good results. Later in life, though, what happens is your metabolism starts to slow down, and quite naturally, you start to pay much more attention to diet and exercise. To diet and nutrition. If you look at John Grimmick's articles in Strength and Health, you will see that as he moved into his 40s, he started to focus a whole lot more on staying lean and trim. There are many more articles about abdominal training than ever before. And he starts to talk about how bodybuilders are too heavy, they're too bulky, they need to lose weight. They look better when they're 20 or 30 pounds lighter. He gives the example of, I believe it was Armand Tanny in the late 40s, early 50s, who lost 20 or 30 pounds and then won the Mr. USA contest, I believe it was, and according to Grimmick, looked better than he had ever looked before. So I think it's partly, a natural progression that is age-related. And I think also that one thing that we're seeing is that a lot more people are staying active and fit, and they're training hard into their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. And because those people are still in the public eye and still doing things and still out there and putting themselves out there, as Clarence does, for example, you have much more of an interest in what works for an older trainee, what works for a more mature body. And that's got to have a much more significant diet and nutrition component. And so we're getting the benefit of having much more longevity in the iron game and many more people looking at this from the perspective of what works when you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, or 70s.
Now, what exactly did you want to hear Clarence's viewpoint on? I'm sorry, you said it early in your answer and it escaped me.
In my own life, as I've grown older, I've started to pay a lot more attention to diet and nutrition. And I think that's part of a natural progression that probably applies to many of us. And I was wondering if Clarence felt that applied to him as well.
Yes, I think it certainly does. What I remember reading from Grimmick is that when he trained for contests or slimmed down, that he simply drank milk and ate bread. And it all seemed to go on his body as muscle. So I think he was really, his genetics were coming to the fore there. Bill is certainly correct that my focus increased on nutrition when I turned to bodybuilding. And I was, of course, trying to get leaner and more muscular. And the big deal at that time was the low-carb diet. And it's still the big deal. But people who have read my book, Ripped, know that I pretty soon rejected that because you need carbohydrates for your brain to work and for energy. And I just felt terrible. It's like a zombie on a low-carb diet, and I talked about that in Ripped. So I was talking about a balanced diet and eating carbohydrates and talking about the idea of eating whole foods in Ripped. And then as I went on, something that we didn't know about for a long time, I think doctors didn't know about it or didn't focus on it, was the importance of fat in the diet. The early on experience was, I know my dad was an MD, and he used to tell people, don't eat any fats you can see. Fat was the culprit. And then, actually, by accident, I started adding some vegetable oil to my meals, mainly with an idea to make the food absorb more slowly. And my triglycerides literally went down by 50%. So that was the first thing that gave me a hint that the fat in the diet was very important. And then after that, I learned about omega-3s. So that became very important. But kind of a side benefit of the fat in the diet is that putting more focus on fat makes it easier to control your appetite and your food intake, because it makes the food absorb more slowly. So there's plus with the fat. Of course, you want to focus on good fat, healthy fat, best fat being from fish, and stay away from the artificial fats, shall we say, the trans fats. That kind of, the other thing was, of course, you wanted to focus on the amount of food intake. And one of the things that I talked about early on, and I still use this, was the idea of uniform eating, that if you eat basically the same pattern, the same foods each day, that there's no need to count calories. And so if you monitor your body weight and your body fat and how you look, and if there needs to be an adjustment, you simply adjust the eating pattern over the course of the day, making small changes. If you do that right, you can do it in a way that you don't even notice it. But your fat cells do notice it. And the idea is to do something that, or use a method where you remain comfortable, you're still enjoying your food, and you're not feeling deprived or hungry. And I managed to do that all along. That's been basically the focus.
The first thing you said there early in your answer is interesting, that you added vegetable oils to your vegetables to slow down the digestion. I think that's really an interesting thing. And also your comment that you say your father said, don't eat any fat that you can see. That's another interesting thing. Obviously, trimming the fat off of meat and so on still is, you know, a good idea, but there's nothing wrong with eating an egg. And you mentioned manufactured fats. I'm just going to, because I have all these points in my head, I'm going to throw them out real quick before I forget them. You mentioned manufactured fats. I heard a phrase, and this is going to go back to Dan John. This is one that he quoted in his book that I really liked. Frankenstein fats. Manufactured fats. Fats that came out of a laboratory instead of an animal. So you don't really, and apparently for a long time, haven't counted your calories, grams of protein, grams of carbs, grams of fat. You kind of just go by feel.
That's right. I tried to eat a balanced diet. I've never counted. The only time that my calories really were counted was when I went to the Cooper Clinic, and they have a nutritionist there where you fill out this food questionnaire, and then they analyze your calories and the components and everything. It's an interesting report, but I've never counted calories. And I think people, they might count calories and when they have a contest coming up or some special event, but people don't want to count calories for the rest of their life. And I think there's a way to do it that you don't need to count calories. So I have measured and weighed a few things, but particularly things like nuts that really are high calorie but should be an important part of the diet. But the key on a lot of this is doing it in a way that you're comfortable with, and that, as I say, you're not going to feel deprived or feel hungry. The only diet people are going to stick with is one that they enjoy.
See, that goes back to something that I've seen both you and Brooks refer to in your training. It's doesn't matter what you're doing. As long as you're doing something, you find the activity that you can stick to because you enjoy it. So again, what you're saying is the same thing. Find a nutrition plan that you don't feel like you're being punished so you can stick to it. And Brooks, I know you don't count your calories and carbs and protein. You just, sounds like your philosophy and Clarence's on nutrition run pretty close.
I think both of us emphasize whole foods and getting our nutrients from real foods and, you know, certainly avoiding all of the frankenfoods, the manufactured monstrosities of the modern food industry. The other point that I think is common to both of us is that we try to look at these things, both diet, nutrition, and training, from a common sense, realistic, what works in the real world perspective. And if you look at my workouts, and the workouts that I advocate for others, if you look at the workouts that Clarence writes about and advocates for others in his books and courses, one thing that you will note is that these are workouts that people can do while they have a job, while they go to school, while they have a family, you know, while they have many other interests and many other activities in life. And it's not a situation where training has to be all day, every day, all day long, the way a lot of other
quote-unquote experts.
I was trying to get away from the quote-unquote experts. But, you know, a lot of the advice out there is advice that frankly, is fantasy land stuff. It's what I refer to as the Muscle Beach fantasy world stuff, where, you know, you're going to live in Southern California and go to Muscle Beach every day and lie on the shore and go to the gym and train all day, every day. And when you're not training, you're just going to lie back on the sand at Muscle Beach. And somehow there's going to be a source of income that pays for the food that you eat. But basically, that's all you want to do is just hang out on the beach and train. And that's the fantasy world approach. And Clarence and I have always advocated a realistic approach. And part of that realistic approach is, you know, let's really have a look at eating patterns that a person can follow for their entire life. You know, not 21 days to a new you, not a new you in 14 days, you know, not 6-minute abs or 60-second abs or 6-second abs or whatever they are, but something that works for the long haul. And in my case, you know, I've been training for almost 50 years now. Clarence has been training for longer. We both still train. We both love training. And we find ways to make it new and interesting and enjoyable. And that's what we try to get other people to do, to find things that they enjoy doing so that they will stick with them. And it's, you know, that's the best approach from a diet and nutrition point of view, and it's the best approach from a training point of view.
I think that's really a very important point. We have to face up to the fact that most of the world is not as interested in training as Brooks and I, and that for most of them, the idea of doing any kind of exercise is the biggest mountain they have to climb. And if they are told that there's many different ways to skin a cat, there's many different ways to do it, and if they will just explore and find something that appeals to them and stick with it until it stops appealing, then they find something else. Of course, that's what my book, Take Charge, is about. That's what the change in that book, that was the 10th book, was to give people many different options for both diet and many ways to exercise and become very fit, and that worked just fine. If people realize that and they stop trying to make it so complicated, and also they stop buying this idea that there's this shortcut. There are some shortcuts, but at the end of the shortcut, everything turns to hell. So this long-term doing it on a regular basis, and they say one of the big thing about success is showing up. The big thing about training is being regular about it. If you be regular in your training, it's just amazing what you can accomplish. And looking at it down there in that lower common denominator, the vast majority of people, and make it as simple as possible. And it really is. And there are just so many ways to do it. And if you find something that really appeals to you, you've really found the mother load and you should stick with it, as I say, until you get tired of it. And then you find another mother load.
I'm curious because obviously Brooks and I are about the same age and you've got about 20 years on the both of us. What was your training like when you were in your mid-50s, Clarence? How does it differ from what you're doing today at 77, is it?
Yes, 77. I get older every year, unfortunately.
We all do, my friend. When we stop getting older, we're not here anymore.
I don't know that it was all that much different than it is now. My training probably is more focused and less training times a week. I have two main workouts a week. One is focused on aerobics, but it's very high-intensity aerobics, and the other is focused on weight training. I probably was doing more likely to do three workouts I did that for a long time. So that would be the two that I mentioned, plus a combination workout. When I was first starting out in bodybuilding, everybody was doing the body part thing. So I don't think I ever did this 6 days, cover your whole body, but I did do push-pull routines and some things like that. You'll find that in my Rip Tree and also the Lean for Life. So I guess the evolution has been towards harder and less. Of course, one of the big discoveries not too long ago was that you have to do more than just the main workouts, that it's important to stay active between workouts. In fact, I'm working on a new article about that right now, where they've come out with the idea that this is for people in sedentary jobs, that this is from the UK, but it's based on worldwide research. People should be either standing or moving for at least 2 hours out of their 8-hour workday, and the goal should be 4 hours, half of their time, moving around in some way. And that sounds kind of onerous, but if you realize in actually doing that, that you're more productive, that you have more energy, that your mind is working better, you're more productive if you do move around. So that's been kind of a big change, something that's, I guess, in the last 10 years, people are having these stand-up desks that are in their treadmill desks, and I don't go for that. I think when I'm sitting down and working on an article, I want to focus on that and not try to not fall down. But I think the activity in between is very important. That's kind of an eye-opener. We used to think if you do 3 workouts a week, and after that you could just do whatever the hell you want, and you didn't have to do anything. Just sitting back and doing nothing was fine until the next workout. Now we're discovering that that's not so. I think that's a good thing. Very interested in that aspect of it.
Wasn't it at one point actually encouraged to do the absolute minimal between workouts so you conserved energy and your body could recover from them? I seem to remember reading stuff like that in my old 60s magazines that I had.
I have a picture of Terry Todd in the Take Charge book, and I can remember this, and I've told him about it. He hadn't denied it, so I think it's true. But there was a picture of him in Strength and Health magazine in doing his work from bed, because his idea was if he stayed in bed, then he could recover better from his very hard power lift workouts. And I don't know what happened. I never saw another picture of him in bed, but he was on his bed and all of the papers spread all over the bed. That, and I don't know whether or how soon he discovered that was a bad idea, but moving around actually helps you recover. And not moving around, it just kind of slows the whole process, but moving around brings more blood and nutrients to the muscles and takes away the fatigue products and just makes everything work, including your brain. So I specifically remember that. In fact, I'm thinking one of the picture of Terry in the book, the picture caption, I talk about that, or I know I talk about it in the text, and he never has corrected me, so... It was very interesting. So that's a good point.
I remember reading it in, I think, maybe something that Vince Gironda wrote and maybe some other size and weight gain related articles where they said, do your heavy workouts, stimulate the muscles, then do as little as possible to not burn calories, conserve energy, and promote recovery and growth. Which, as you're saying, I know if I do a heavy workout and I just lay around and don't do much of anything the next day, the soreness kind of sets in. If I'm more active the next day, I seem to recover more quickly.
I think that's exactly accurate, that moving around, you do recover more quickly.
Well, I think a lot of the advice in the 60s magazines was aimed at very skinny beginner, usually a teenager. And the problem was that in addition to their workouts, they wanted to go out and play baseball and, you know, run around with their buddies and go to parties and go dancing and stay up all night and burn the candle at both ends. And so some of the message in those old weight, well, not old, but in the 60s and 70s era weight gaining advice articles was about the importance of rest and relaxation if you're a truly skinny beginner who's trying to pack on muscular body weight. So that's probably good advice, But again, look at the audience that it's aimed at. It's aimed at a hyperactive teenager who needs to slow down a little bit if he wants to put on 20 pounds of muscle. But problem is, people remember that, and you know, they remember thinking about something they read when they were 16, and then when they're 26 or when they're 36, they try to apply it, and they think, okay, I want to gain more muscle mass, and so what I need to do is take it real easy. I remember reading that when I was younger. And immediately they're making a mistake because they're trying to take advice aimed at a 15 or 16-year-old and apply it when they're 30 or 40. And then you end up with silly things like, I'm only going to train and I'm not going to do anything at all. And of course, you have some people who go to the extreme of, I'm not going to do housework. I'm not going to work in the yard. I'm not going to do anything to help anybody. I'm not going to go play in the park with my kids because I don't want to, you know, run the risk of losing muscle size. So, you know, there's a lot of advice that has a kernel of truth in it at one point in time, at least for one audience, but then people take it and they distort it and it just becomes crazy. That's one of the common themes in physical training, that there's good advice, at least for certain people at certain times of their career, and then it gets turned into something crazy that supposedly everybody needs to do at all stages of their career, and it just doesn't work.
Not everything works for everybody, and it has to be taken in the right context.
Well, that's very true, and the context is really important, and that's something that I think people miss when they start studying strength training, bodybuilding, diet, and nutrition. They take things that are intended really for a different situation, and they try to pull it in and apply it to their own situation. And it just doesn't work at all. And it's interesting that you have people who often are extremely intelligent, very analytical, and they solve problems in all other aspects of their life. They use common sense. But when it comes to their own training or to diet and nutrition, they lose that ability. And they just end up doing things that when you look at them, you're just shaking your head and saying, why in the world are you doing that? And you just can't imagine how they got there or what has led them, you know, down a path that is obviously so far afield. And it, you know, I see it happen with older trainees all the time. A lot of it, I think, is just not admitting that you actually do get older. And that things change as you get older, you know, which Bill, you and I have talked about before. And, you know, I think you've picked a good panel. If two of us make a panel of guests, you picked a good panel because Clarence and I have both been very open and honest and candid in our writing about our personal journeys and about the effect of getting older and about how, you know, things happen and things change, and that's okay, you know, which a lot of people just don't want to hear, much less admit.
Well, if you don't recognize that your body is changing, no matter what you want it to do, you're going to end up hurting yourself, or you're going to just end up getting very frustrated. Obviously, the weights we use today are not the weights we used 20 years ago. And we have to ignore what we did 20 years ago because it's done. It's gone. I have a friend who used to be a competitive bodybuilder. He's in his early 60s and he's still in phenomenal, phenomenal shape, but he still trains 6 days a week, hardcore bodybuilding. And he's always complaining about his joints. He's always complaining that he's tired. He's always complaining that he just doesn't feel good. He looks amazing. And he's still strong as a bull, but the rest of his life is totally unbalanced because of what he's doing to maintain that.
I think it certainly is true that age is a factor. I think it's not as big a factor as some people want to let on, and it's amazing how much continuing to exercise in an intelligent way, making allowances for joints and so on, and eating a good diet, how much it slows down the aging process. And just because people are normally not doing well at a certain age doesn't mean that's the way it has to be. That's one of the things we tried to illustrate by the training pictorial on our website now, which we've just revised. And so it has pictures of me from 15 to 77. There must be about 40 photos, but it just shows my condition from year to year. And if you look at that, it's an amazingly little change. So it's kind of shows what the benefit of a lifetime of being consistently exercising in a reasonable way, not your friend there continuing to go 6 days a week. And a lot of people just like it that way. Bill Pearl has dropped back from six times a week till five times a week. But I don't know exactly what he does, but I'm sure he's cognizant of what's happening in his body and is adjusting as necessary. But the thing I like to focus on is just how much you can slow down the aging process by leading an active life, by continuing to exercise, getting some very intense exercise. I think that's really important, because the thing that goes down due to age more than anything else is your fast twitch fibers. So these people that are jogging by my house, that we see them every day, they're never doing anything about those fast fibers. So they're basically going away. But if you make it a point once or twice a week to really wake up those fast fibers, it makes a tremendous difference, because your muscle fibers are talking to all the rest of the parts of your body and just makes everything work better if you have more and more active and working muscle fibers. And I think people, if they would focus on that what's possible is really pretty damn amazing.
Oh, and just since you mentioned Bill, I think he's actually down to 4 days now, and I spoke with him last week.
I really enjoyed that. That was just a tremendous interview with him. You really covered so many different things. He has been my role model forever, as he should be for a lot of people, but just in his business and in his working out and just being a really decent human being. And I was so delighted to hear that and hear him at 84 just sounding wonderful. I mean, asking so many things, and man, there was no delay, just snapped it out. Never any pauses. It just, everything was clicking. It was just great to hear.
I was very excited about doing that interview, and I was really surprised. I just mentioned, and I'm just going to kind of go off in that direction for a second. You know, as you both know, I've become good friends with Chris Dickerson, who is Bill's number one student. And just one day, Chris and I were talking, and he said, I was speaking with Bill a little earlier. And I said, next time you talk to him, I know he doesn't do interviews, but would you ask him? And he said, forget about next time. Let me call him right now. And Chris called me back in 5 minutes, and he said, Bill's expecting your call. And he gave me his number. And Bill has just been so kind to me. And, you know, he told me, call anytime. And he is an absolute class act, a total gentleman. And like you say, at 84, he is as sharp as can be. He just went through that knee replacement surgery, and I checked on him last Friday, and he was outside working on one of his antique cars, 37 Ford pickup. He was going to show it the following day, taking it to an antique car show. Said, the knee's all healed, I'm back in the gym, everything is great. And then he said, but I got to get off the phone. I don't want my wife to think I'm just sitting here talking to you while she's doing all the work on the car. And since you both have mentioned the name John Grimmick, and Bill is, you know, an idol to so many people, John Grimmick is his idol. And he was telling me he has a photograph that John gave him that he basically, I think you heard it in the interview, Clarence, he says, we practically light candles under it.
Absolutely. Yes, I do remember that. Bill doesn't allow access to very, very many people, so you're in an honored role there.
You know, that's exactly what Chris told me, because Bill said some things to me, and I called Chris and I said, is he serious about this or is he just being nice? And Chris said, no, he wouldn't say that to you if he wasn't sincere. So I feel very privileged to have added Bill as a, I don't know that I can get away with calling him a friend, but a definite close acquaintance. And it's an honor to me that he'll, you know, take my calls and chat with me on the phone for no reason other than just to kill some time. Brooks, I know you're busy, but you do have to listen to that interview. It's something I'm very proud of. So Clarence, you said at the time, you know, when you were competing, you were obviously doing the more traditional bodybuilding thing, but when it wasn't contest time, were you doing like a, maybe like a 4-day split as opposed to the 6-day that most people were doing, or?
No, my training is pretty much the same year round. When I was focusing on a contest or a photo shoot, I became more concerned about monitoring my diet, but my training pretty much stays the same. I'm not up and down. I'm pretty much regular.
Okay. And even back when you were competing?
Yes. I also think one of the advantages that I had was that I did not gain a bunch of weight between contests or between photo shoots. I kept my weight down. And why I was able to do that was because I was eating a diet that I was comfortable with and didn't make me feel deprived or hungry, that I enjoyed what I ate. So there's no reason to change. And I think that's not true with a lot of people. With that, with the contrast facing them in the face, they literally starve themselves and eat very low carbs and make themselves very uncomfortable. And I can't testify to this firsthand, but you see them about a month later, you wouldn't recognize them because they put on a lot of weight. I haven't done that. I think that's one of the advantages, one of the things that's allowed me to keep doing as well as I have for so long.
Well, you know, I think where you're going back to the photographs where you're saying you don't look that much different over the years, I think the fact that you didn't do those massive weight fluctuations has probably done wonderful things for not ruining your skin tone like a lot of the guys who would go 40, 50 pounds heavier in the off season, then diet down. By the time they're in their 60s, their skin's going to just be all stretched out and your skin tone still, you know, is good. You're in phenomenal, phenomenal shape.
On the training pictorial, the age 77 picture is with, you'll notice I have body hair. And I made absolutely no adjustment. We just took the picture several times to get the light and everything right. But there was no preparation. There's no body color or anything in that photo. There's no dieting. There's no nothing. It was interesting to see that. A lot of people have commented on that. I have a doctor friend, he's an orthopedic surgeon from up in Denver, and he said that was the photo that he was really most interested in because it's your everyday condition that really counts.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense because it's, you know, you can get ready for the photo shoot and you do the little carb depletion and maybe a little water depletion, lay in the sun to get the veins out and everything. But if that's just, okay, let's do the pictures now and it's on your normal eating habits, your normal day-to-day routine, that really is impressive because most people don't realize the bodies they see in the magazines, that's, you know, they prepare for a photo shoot. That's not what these guys and these women look like every day.
And that's certainly right. My doctor friend, his name is Wade Smith. He really spends a lot of time talking to people about exercising and diet. So that's what they're interested in, something that they can stick with. Somebody like me is a kind of a role model that he can put out. In fact, he bought 50 copies of my book, the Take Charge book, to give out to his patients. And if we could just find a few more people like that, we'd be very happy.
Well, we're out of time for this week, so we'll be back next week with the remainder of this interview with my guests Clarence Bass and Brooks Kubik. Two guys I really enjoy talking with. I always learn something new when I talk with both of them. So we'll have that interview for you next week, and Lisa will be back next week with another interesting article on I don't know what. I'm sure she's found something good for you guys. This has been Real World Fitness. I'm your host, Bill. One last time, let's say a happy Father's Day to everyone out there once again. See you all soon. Real World Fitness is a production of the Serotalk Podcast Network in cooperation with KosiabaFitness.com. All questions, comments, and feedback should be submitted to resources@serotalk.com. If you're listening on a mobile device, use your iBlink radio app to submit an iReport. Promotional consideration paid for by audible.com.